These are recollections of Turner Ashby. Memories of the years when the oceans rose and the several states were separated asunder. Chapter 14.
So does this mean I don't have to go to Texas?
The young woman, very comely young woman, asked.
That is absolute truth, my dear. You are now a free and sole citizen of the vast and sovereign and oh-so-democratic country of Colorado, with all the rights, privileges, and great, great, and hallowed responsibilities thereof. You are no longer beholden and no longer legally bound to any other entity. Oh, and any of your debts and oaths made both prior and concurrent with the dissolution of the U.S. government in the joint actions of the aggrieved several states in the year 2029 A.D. are now owned exclusively by Country Colorado. Any redress of grievances and or interpretations of this wholly bound certificate must be taken up with the provisional Colorado Attorney General's office located in Fort Collins, Colorado. Is this all perfectly clear? I guess. Well, good enough,
Sterling Bowen said in his squeaky voice, as he laid a comforting hand on the girl's shoulder, and then flashed his wonderful smile. A smile that got him in and out of trouble faster than a squirrel jumping from tree to tree. Sometimes he and his smile would land on a branch, and that branch would bend down just about all the way to the ground. But he and that smile would go flying back up and just keep moving.
Congratulations, dear. Now, Mr. Ashby here will accept your fees and hard currency and then administer the oath to you and your entire happy clan here and then finally affix the great and binding seal of the sovereign nation of Colorado to your transfer of citizenship certificates. Then Miss Claire here will be most honored to enter your name and the names of your lovely family in the online newly updated registry of North American citizenship. You say that costs extra?
The woman let a dreary toddler slip off her hip and down to the floor.
A token amount, my dear. A token amount, but highly, highly recommended. The Texas Indenture and Tax Relief Commission reads the North American registry almost daily and follows it religiously. Of course, you've already been entered into the Universal Data Bank of Peerage. That's right. I'm a duchess.
That you are, my dear. That you are. The Duchess of Middleborough. Fine town, fine little town.
Oh, I guess we should go ahead and do the registry.
Very good. Excellent choice.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Bowen. You've done so much for me, and this means so much to my family. The devil's taken so many, and I don't know how to repay.
The girl sobbed and pulled Sterling Bowen to her breast. She was a big girl, maybe a head taller than him. He didn't seem to mind. He'd mentioned a number of times he liked him tall and broad and fetching and willing, and, well, beholden wasn't a bad thing. And this particular young woman seemed to have a certain aptitude for knowing just how to repay.
Is Colorado wonderful?
She asked.
Oh, my, yes. It is an outstanding country, just outstanding. Very picturesque. And they want immigrants?
Oh, my, yes. They need them. They need them awful. They are working on the same saline reduction, injection, irrigation regimen that has changed the deserts of Mexico into the gardens of Babylon.
It sounds lovely.
And so it is. When do we go? The girl asked.
Go where? Why, Colorado, our new home.
You got to read the fine print, girl. Transportation not included. This is the way it went for our little band of sellers and promoters of the Bowen Citizenship and Peerage Exchange Partnership Incorporated. As we made our way halfway across the realm of Kentucky, Mr. Bowen claimed that he possessed the representational franchise and rights to sell, barter, and or exchange the citizenships of 16 sovereign nations. And what more, he was vested with the exclusive power to assign any number of honorable patrons with titles and crests of over 24 ancient European houses. He had a printer and a number of blank certificates in the back of his wagon. They attested that fact. I was never quite sure why Sterling Bowen took such a shine to Claire and Ed and myself, ragtag as we were. Well, I can understand Claire. She was pretty, had a sense of order and intelligence about her. She couldn't help herself. She straightened up Bowen's wagon right off and corrected the spelling in a number of his boilerplate certificates. And come to think of it, Ed's inclusion made total sense. He provided muscle. But what about me?
I know who you are,
Bowen whispered to me on the first evening we met, caught in the mountain fog, stumbling through the Cumberland Gap, crossing the Virginia into Kentucky.
You're Warwick Ashby's boy.
I asked him how he knew.
I had some dealings on a number of occasions with your father. Honorable man for a government official. Let us say a gem, a true diamond amongst chipped and worthless flints. I was representing some Eastern Shore beachfront property at the time. Very good deals, oh, extremely so. People were snatching the choicest lots right up. Of course, I had no idea that beaches could relocate in a truly physical way under the duress of global warming. But I guess nothing should be surprising in this age of rising tides. I was flabbergasted, that's what I was. I was flabbergasted that the state of Virginia did not honor titles to land that no longer broke through the waves. Extremely difficult legal situation. Very complicated, you understand. Your father, he gave me some excellent advice.
What was that? I asked.
Gatown.
Bowen laughed. What's that have to do with me? I asked.
I am an honorable man, just like your father, and I know when I owe a debt. I don't like owing debts. It muddles the exchange of currency and ideas. Makes it harder for us to lay our cards on the table, so to speak. So now I see a way to repay your father for his august advice.
How's that? I asked.
Keep you out of trouble, boy.
But I'm not in trouble.
Au contraire, mon ami.
I never did like it when he spoke French. French always meant trouble, trouble that Bowen knew, and you didn't. Wasn't fair. He reached into his coat pocket, pulled out a wad of crumpled notes, dog-eared cards, a rare stick of chewing gum, a totem of some sort. And then he unfolded a fairly large smudged notice. Wanted, it said, and there was a photograph of me.
Is that you?
Ed asked, peering over our shoulders.
It's not very flattering, Claire said. I think the eyes are set too far apart.
What's it say he's done? Ed asked. He's been with us for almost 3 months and he hadn't done anything.
Less than nothing, Claire added. Says he's an enemy of the country of North Carolina. He's accused of espionage, possessing valuable stolen state secrets, and he's considered dangerous.
Is he wanted for loitering? Claire asked, most helpfully.
I've seen him loiter. Seen him loiter with my own eyes.
Must be some other Turner Ashby, Ed said. Nothing much danger at all about Turner. He's a cupcake.
With icing on top,
Claire again added, very helpfully.
Never you mind. You just stick with me, do as you're told, and we'll be fine,
Bowen pronounced.
What's that mean? Claire asked. We're going to be looking over our shoulders?
Everybody look over their shoulders, Bowen said.
That's okay. Good for business. Paranoia breeds opportunity.
Paranoia was rampant in those days. It oozed. It dripped. It got between the cracks and pushed us away from what made us civilized. But of course, as the saying went, you ain't paranoid if they really are out to get you. And in those days, it did seem that everybody was after everybody else. It only made good economic sense with the realignment and disillusion of so many corners of the former United States came the threat of disillusion of every kind of known boundary, whether it be between a home and the dark forest, between kissing cousins from the opposite sides of the tracks, or just necessary social contracts to buy or sell a loaf of bread. Boundaries were fraying, and they were being replaced by bounties. And, of course, That's where the Bawan Citizenship and Peerage Exchange Partnership Incorporated truly set in. We traded in the commodity of crossing boundaries. That by changing your name or changing your allegiance, you might find acceptance. True belonging to some more mythical tribe across the other side of a wide and rushing river. I swear, talking about Sterling Bawan after all these years is making me sound like him. Sterling was rather poetic in his understanding of the inner workings of the human soul. He sold the idea to all those who were disenfranchised that they would find their place in the world. Of course, that place came for a fee. But enough for the moment about human beings and their foibles and their fragility. I must tell you about Sarah. Sarah was a sweet, sweet thing. Handsome, all but 15 hands high, good disposition. She had a four-cornered white star on her forehead. She was Bawan's mare. Our world revolved around that horse and the wagon she pulled with very little complaint. Kentucky was horse country. Always had been for over 250 years. And we were entering into the thick of it. We had found the edge of the Duchy of Lexington. The city and environs were surrounded by wall and by miles and thousands of acres of bluegrass. It was rich, rich land. And it was all due to the raising of the best horses in the world. With a number of nations going back on technology, retrofitting, they called it, the horse was more than just in vogue. The horse was at the heart of how a nostalgic plane valued. God-fearing retrofitted people saw themselves. No more noisy electricity and gas-sucking machines. No, sir. Simple, independent, with purpose and four legs under them. People wanted horses. This made a number of Kentucky gentry very wealthy. Very wealthy, indeed filthy rich, including the Earl of Lexington.
I want to meet that man. I imagine we have something in common. I bet we might just have some business to attend to, Bawan said. Besides, it's getting on winter. We want to be inside that fortress there. We want to be inside safe and warm. Don't want to be left on the outside.
But we don't know the Earl of Lexington,
Blair said.
He don't know that. Here.
We'd pulled off the side of the road and Bawan opened a trunk buried in the back of the wagon and pulled out a number of fine, fine things. I had no idea.
I believe we might just be the Earl's long-lost relations.
From Colorado?
Ed asked.
All thereabouts, in exile, naturally.
This is lovely,
Claire declared. She'd found a hat. It was a late 1950s, early 1960s lavender pillbox hat with a matching suit jacket. Skirt, kicked off her dingy, road-dusted sandals smelling of horse apples, slid out of her cut-off jeans, and slipped the apparel on. She was transformed. She was a vision. She looked like Audrey Hepburn in an old DVD. Made me think of Lays Fitzgerald. Lays reminded me of Audrey Hepburn sometimes. And I wondered often where Lays was.
There's our princess,
Bawan announced.
I can't be a princess. I don't know anything about it.
Never you mind, Claire, dear. You'll be the daughter of a minor duke and his lady, third cousin's earl, out of the West Country across Mississippi. You will be the Lady Jane. Everybody likes the name Jane. Makes them feel superior. And once I get through typing it up, your lineage will be so buried in the back of the official book of Kentucky Peerage. Revised edition, course. Our Earl of Lexington will have no idea how many blood relatives he has out there. All he'll know is he has an awfully charming niece.
What are the rest of us supposed to do? Ed asked.
Well, Ed, you look like the captain of the guard.
Ed beamed at this nonsense.
And you, Turner, you are the exchequer of Montgomery.
Well, I have to admit that, although I had no idea whatsoever what an exchequer was or did. The title sounded awfully and infinitely important. So without much fanfare or thought, we let Sarah lead us clumping along to the gates and the moat. Somebody had bothered to dig a moat to the entrance of Lexington Center. And that's center with an R before the E, to generally Anglophile and gussy up a rather plain word. There were no guards at the gate, so our little group of traveling peers walked right in. I was astounded. We had entered the realm of Lexington, Kentucky, and that in turn had led us into a new era. Ed called this new era not to stay put, nor the get gone, nor even the stay gone. He called this new era the get caught. And we did get caught. Eventually. More later. Turner Ashby.